today we're going to continue in our Worth Saving series. And, you know, as Nancy said, it hasn't necessarily been an easy one. This actually comes out of God challenging me in some of this. So I thought I would share in the joy of that and let you be a part of that journey with me. But, you know, this series, we're talking about sharing our faith. We're talking about evangelism, you know, however you want to say it. But I think it's so important for us as Christians. I think it's the most important thing for us to do is to share our faith. And, you know, first week we talked about a survey that Lifeway did, and it said that 80% of Christians believe that it is that is part of their responsibility to share their faith, and they're comfortable with doing it. But only 20% said they actually did share their faith. And so there's a big disconnect in that, and I fell in that category as well. You know, you think as a preacher I share my faith all the time. Well, I talk about Jesus all the time in church, but what about when I'm not in church? You know, am I doing anything different than what the average Christian does as far as sharing my faith? And I've realized that I've surrounded myself with Christians. You know, we have a great family here at Believers, and I love hanging out with you guys and being with you guys, and it seems like I've surrounded myself with Christians that I'm not around a lot of non-Christians. Everybody I work with is a Christian, because I work here, you know. Hopefully we're all Christians that work here, as we're leading the church. So, you know, it's just like, am I purposely putting myself in a place to where I can share my faith? And so God began to challenge me personally on, you know, how do I share my faith? You know, do I practice what I preach? Am I sharing the gospel with the lost outside of my occupation as a minister? And so, you know, he asked me several different questions that challenged me personally. And so I'm sharing these questions with you and hoping to challenge you as well with them. But, you know, we're talking Great Commission here. You know, Jesus, before he ascended into heaven, in Mark 16, he said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. And so we know that it's our responsibility to share what Jesus did for us. Matthew had a little bit different take on it and what Jesus said. And he said in Matthew 28, he said, go and make disciples of all nations. And see, we can see that the Great Commission is actually twofold. Yeah, it's about sharing our faith, but it's about taking it a step further and building relationships with people and discipling people or helping people walk their faith out. You know, a lot of people get a little nervous when you start talking about discipleship, you know, teaching people. I don't think I can handle that. I don't think I'm equipped to teach somebody. But basically what discipleship is, you being in relationship with someone, you're doing this journey together and you're helping each other out. I mean, that's what discipleship is. It's what I've learned, let me share with you, and what you've learned, you share with me, and we push each other to be better Christians. And really, that's what discipleship is about, is learning and growing together. And so, you know, I believe that faith should be shared within relationships. You know, if we truly value what Jesus has done for us, I mean, hopefully that's the best thing that's ever happened to you, that you were a sinner, you were caught in your junk, and then someone came along and shared Jesus with you, and Jesus came and he changed your life, and he made your life better. And so, you know, that should be like the most important thing to your life. And so it only makes sense that the people that we value the most, we share our faith with. And so, you know, why is it that we're not sharing our faith, is the question that was asked. And so we've been kind of diving into this. This is our third week in this. The first week we asked the question, and these are the ones that God asked me, is like, do I truly value people? If I truly value you, then it would only make sense that I would share the most valuable thing to me with you, which is my faith in Jesus Christ, you know, the thing that has changed my life. You know, if I'm truly valuing people, if I see people with value, then I'm going to invest in them. I'm going to give them what I have. The second week, we asked the question, do I see people as worthy of my time to invest in them? And, you know, it's easy to share our faith, but do we see people as valuable enough for my time? See, time is one of those things that we don't always seem to have enough of. You know, we all have the same amount of time in life, and You know, and it depends on our priorities on how we spend that time. And so, you know, my time is valuable to me, and so I want to use my time wisely to invest in people that are close to me. And so do I see people in my life as valuable enough of my time to invest in them? And with that, we talked about Judas and, you know, how Jesus, knowing that Judas was going to betray him, yet he still took the time and the effort to invest in Judas and trust him, knowing the end result was going to be betrayal. But yet he valued him more than that, and he invested in him anyway. I love what John Maxwell says. He said, "I will not share my faith with someone until I've added value to them." You know, when I first heard that, I thought, John, you're missing it, all right? You know, I like to talk to people when I listen to them, you know, like podcasts and stuff. I talk back to them like they can hear me. I'm like, John, you're crazy. You know, that's not what God said. You know, we're supposed to share our faith with everybody. But then, it clicked in my mind as he continued to talk about it, is that, you know, if I haven't added value to you, why are you going to listen to me? And so let me add value to you. Let me show you that I care for you enough to invest in you, and then let me share my faith with you. And the whole idea around that is relationships. That he wants to invest in someone. He wants to pour into someone, invest, have that relationship, and then from the relationship, he has a voice in their life already to be able to speak his faith into their life. And so I think that this is the key in being effective, because you ask most people, let's just do a quiz real quick. Let's do a quick vote. Not a vote, but how many of you came to faith because of someone in your life told you about Jesus or brought you to church? Raise your hand. If someone close to you is the one who kind of initiated that, how many of you got saved because you walked into a room and someone was preaching the gospel and you just gave your life to God? See, faith should be shared within relationship. It's because of relationship that we come to faith. And that's what God showed us in the Bible, that with Adam and Eve, he had relationship with them, that he went down and he spent time with them in the garden. He talked with them. And it was a real thing. It wasn't just like a God who's up there somewhere directing traffic, telling you what to do and where to go, and it's just impersonal. But faith is personal. It is built in within relationship, and that's the way God designed it. And so that's the way it's most effective, is within relationship. And so this week I want to present a different question to you, and this one hit me hard. I'm not going to lie about it, because it made me dig a lot deeper than a lot of the surface stuff. He asked me, "Do you have prejudices in your life that stop you from sharing your faith with certain people? Are there prejudices in our life that stop us from sharing our faith or beginning a relationship with somebody in order for us to invest in them and share our faith with them?" See, we like to think we don't have any prejudice. I love everybody just the same. You're lying. You don't love everybody the same. Only God can do that. But we all have prejudice in our life that keep us separated from people. It might not be a race thing. It might be a political view that keeps you from getting close to people. It might be a behavioral issue. It might be a lifestyle issue that we have prejudice against people that cause us to kind of push them away. Now, I'm not saying you're supposed to be best friends with everybody. You know, that's what I'm not getting at. But we should be willing to build a relationship with people no matter who they are or what they do. Are you with me so far? All right. So are you willing to begin a relationship with someone that you don't agree with their beliefs? You know, there's lots of people that don't believe the same way we do. You know, one of the major things, because I was trying to compare, you know, what we're going to talk about today into the now, you know, and, you know, I think about, Christians and Muslims. I mean, faith-wise, we believe differently. We believe that Jesus is the Messiah, and Muslims don't believe that. And that's the basis of Christianity, that Jesus is the Messiah. You know, otherwise we're just like every other religion. Every other religion, they have prophets and they have gods and they have all these things. What sets us apart differently is like we believe in a personal Savior. Someone that came down, a God that came down and gave His life for us so that we could have relationship with Him. Is it a belief thing? Maybe it's behavior. Someone just has a different, they go out and party and you don't. You know, it might be a behavioral type thing or it might be a lifestyle difference that you have. And so today I want to dive into the Bible and see how Jesus responded to a situation where there was some prejudice going on. And we're going to read about the woman at the well. And, if we know biblical history at all, we know that the Jews and the Samaritans did not get along. Okay? We can go back and we read this all through the Gospels and the Jews and the Samaritans didn't get along. And I didn't realize how big this was until I studied into it this week. Like, I knew it was a big deal, but I didn't realize how big a deal it was. And it wasn't just that they just didn't get along. They had some disagreements, but they hated each other. I mean, it was just like, you are the devil, get away from me, hate each other. I mean, it was just that big of a thing in their society to where Jews and Samaritans, they just, like oil and water, I mean, they just, it just wasn't there. It wasn't going to happen. And so I want to read this story in John chapter 4 about this. And then today we're going to do some history. How many of y'all like history in here? We got some history buffs in here. I love history. One thing that I like to do is when I'm doing anything, I like to have like a landmark that I can kind of, you know, like I know where this is. And then, you know, as we talk about stuff, I can build around that. The first time I went down to Honduras, I just felt lost as could be because we're driving down these roads and going up and down curves and mountains. And I'm just like, I have no idea where I'm at. And so the next time I went back, I took my GPS and I put in some coordinates as we went to different places. And now I know where places are. So when I go, I don't feel lost. How many map people are out there? I mean, like, you like to know where you're at. Like, you have this built-in compass. Like, okay, I know where I'm at. I'm good, you know. And so, but today I want to kind of dive into the history of this because as we look at the history between the Jews and the Samaritans, we'll see how big of a rift that was between these two people. And we're going to see how Jesus handles this situation in this moment. And so I want to read the story first, then I want to go back and talk some history, then we'll come back to the story. All right? So John chapter 4, verse 1, says, Jesus knew the Pharisees had heard that he was baptizing and making more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize them. His disciples did. So they left Judea and returned to Galilee. He had to go through Samaria on his way. Eventually, he came to the Samaritan village of Sychar, near the field that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired from his long walk, sat wearily beside the well about noontime. So we read a bunch of history stuff there, some geography stuff there that's going to make sense here in just a second. But we're going to talk about it. Verse 7, soon the Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, please give me a drink. He was alone at the time because his disciples had gone into the village to buy some food. The woman was surprised, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. So she said to Jesus, you are a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink? Jesus replied, if you only knew the gift God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me and I would give you living water. So here we see the scenario. I'm sure lots of us have read this many times and we're like, okay, Jews and Samaritans, they don't get along, so it's weird that they're talking. But there's so much more to that than what we can just read right there in this passage. In that she was surprised that Jesus even spoke to her. If we jump into verse 27, you know, Jesus sent the disciples into town to buy some food. And verse 27 says, just then the disciples came back and they were shocked to find him talking to a woman. And none of them had the nerve to ask, what are you doing with her? Or why are you talking to her? So the woman left the water jug beside the well, ran back into the village, telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything that I have ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? So the people came streaming from the village to see him. See, it'd be easy to miss a lot of what's actually going on right here in this passage of Scripture because we don't know the history. And so today I want to dive briefly into some of this history of why this was such a shocking event. And Jesus and this woman, they talked about a lot of stuff. It wasn't just like a lighthearted, hey, how are you doing? How's the kids? You know, those kind of conversations. But they went into some deep conversation talking about the ancestry of the well. Are you greater than our master Jacob? They talked about religious stuff. Why? She asked Jesus, so why do the Jews worship in Jerusalem, but we worship over here? We think this is the right mountain. You think that one's the right mountain. And it was this really deep and heavy conversation that they had. But in the end, we see her running back to the village, say, come see a man who told me everything I did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? Why did she react like that? And why was she so excited about it? Let's look into some history real quick. And I have some maps for you today to help to understand this, because I have to have maps, get it in my brain to understand. Throw up this first map right here. Oh, she already did. Look at there. All right. So this goes all the way back to the 12 tribes of Israel. I mean, we're going way back, all the way to Jacob on this. You know, Jacob, he had his sons, and they became the 12 tribes of Israel. Actually, Joseph was the 11th, well, not the 11th son, but he was a son that he personally didn't get land, but his two children did that Jacob adopted. Their names were Ephraim and Manasseh. Can you see those up there? All right in the middle, you see the second largest, it actually might be the largest group. Who has the largest amount of land here? Manasseh does, and Ephraim is right below him in that. And so this was the breakup of the 12 tribes of Israel. The land that they got, you know, God promised them, he said, I'm going to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. Hello. All right. Hey, we're good. We're still good. So he said, I'm going to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. And this was the land that God was talking about. I was like, we're good. We still got some lights. We still got a projector. We're good. All right. And so this is the land flowing with milk and honey, and this is how it was broken up among them. Now, we remember Joseph. Joseph was the favorite, wasn't he? See, my name is Joseph, so I'm the favorite. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, but Joseph was the favorite out of Jacob. And so guess who got the best land? Joseph's descendants got the best land, didn't they? I mean, they got the cream of the crop here. And so here we see Manasseh and Ephraim are Joseph's kids. And so this is the land that they got. All right, and we also know the story of Joseph that the other 10 brothers didn't like Joseph, right? In fact, they didn't like him so much that they staged his death, sold him into slavery, and went back to his dad and said, look, an animal has killed your favorite son. I mean, this is how much they did not like Joseph. All right? And so what we're reading here today goes all the way back to the original brothers, because Manasseh and Ephraim end up becoming the Samaritans. That bloodline becomes the Samaritans. All right, so let's look into this. So early on, what begins to happen is that, you know, Joshua brings them into the promised land. All right, and they begin to break up land, and everybody gets this land, this land, this land. And so Israel begins to complain, as they like to do. Y'all don't know anybody that likes to complain a lot, do you? But anyway, they like to complain, and they say, God, we want a king. God wanted to be their king. He wanted to be that ruled over them. And so Bethair's like, no, we want a king. And so he began to give them kings, like King Saul, King David, King Solomon. After King Solomon died, the nation was broken up into two groups. All right, next slide here. The two groups. We have the kingdom of Israel up north, in the kingdom of Judah down south. All right, this is after Solomon had died. It got broken up into two groups. All right, and so as we compare that to the last one, the kingdom of Israel is Manasseh all the way down to Ephraim, and we got Asher and Naphtali and all those guys up top. All right, and Judah and Simeon and those guys are down in the bottom. Okay, and so there's begin another rift. You know, it's those people up north and those people down south. Does that sound familiar anywhere? But anyway, and so they begin to break up. And what began to happen was the people of Samaria loved their false idols. Their king introduced false idols into there, and so they began to worship idols. And so the people of Judah were like, you know what? We can't, you guys are not worshiping God anymore. And so, you know, we're done with you guys, okay? If y'all are going to be that way, then we're done, okay? And so it kind of starts there with a religious issue. All right, you're worshiping false idols, we're worshiping the true God. And there's a little pride that comes in there. Look at us, we're worshiping the true God, and y'all are sinful people over there worshiping idols. And so what begins to happen over time, you know, there's, you know, back and forth between those two. And the Assyrians came along. In 724 BC, the Assyrians came along and conquered all of Samaria. And what they did is they took a lot of them out and they brought new people in. And you know what the people of Judah said? Suckers, that's what you get because you worship false idols. And so a lot of new people began to come in and with their gods and their idols. And so the Samaritans began to intermarry with the Assyrians and began to worship their god and the god of the Assyrians as well. And so, again, Judah's sitting there like laughing. I'm like, do you not see what's happening? You're intermarrying, which is not what you can't do. You're worshiping false idols. You're not supposed to do that. And so they begin to push him away even more. But then along comes Babylon, and they capture the south. They capture the kingdom of Judah. You know what the Samaritans do? Suckers. And so they get all taken off to Babylon. And there's this just this constant just irritation between the two that go on. But see, it's not just a religious reason why they didn't like each other. See, we can read all of that in 1 and 2 Kings, all of that going back and forth, people getting captured and foreigners coming in, and Samaritans were considered half-breeds. And they were just despised by the Jews because they weren't the real Israel anymore. And so it comes along that, you know, in the days of Nehemiah, that they began to come back and try to recapture Jerusalem. And Nehemiah comes back in to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And you know who's there to try to stop them do that? The Samaritans. We read in Nehemiah chapter 6 that there's a group of people that keep trying to distract them and get them away and trying to pull them away so they can destroy the walls again. And that is the Samaritans trying to do this. So it's no longer just a religious thing. It's a political thing. It's a social thing. Every part of their lives are at war with each other. And so Nehemiah is building the walls and the Samaritans are trying to stop them. And it gets to the point to where the Samaritans begin to create their own version of religion, of worshiping the one true God. But we're only going to go by the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Old Testament. We're going to reject your prophets. We're going to reject your poetry. We're going to reject all of this stuff because it's from the Jews. And so they make their own Judaism up. And they actually build their own temple to where they think that Moses said that the temple should be built, which just so happened to be right outside of Sinjar. See, the Jews built the temple on the mountain in Jerusalem, but the Samaritans went to Mount Gerizim to build their temple. And there's lots of stuff going on here. All right, so go ahead and go to this next one. All right, so here we see a breakup of the map again. Same map, just different. All right, we see Jerusalem at the bottom. That's down in Judah. As we go up, we see Mount Gerizim right there. We see Shechem. We see Sychar, Samaria. We go up and we see Galilee at the top. In what we are talking about here, going back to our story, it says, so Jesus left Judea and returned to Galilee. Where does he have to walk through to get there? He has to go through Samaria. See, the Jews hated the Samaritans so much that a lot of times they would not even walk through Samaria to get to where they're going. They would go on the other side of the Jordan River and walk up the other side of the Jordan River to get back to Galilee. He said, if we walk through there, we will become unclean and we won't be able to worship. And so here we see Jesus doing something that he probably shouldn't supposed to be doing. There's many times that he walked through Samaria to go back and forth between Jerusalem and Galilee. And so let's go back into our story and let's read this. With this history in mind of all that's going on. Because what Jesus actually does here is he steps across some serious cultural boundaries in order to do what he's called to do and what God sent him on earth to do. So let's go back and read this. Verse 3, so he left Judea to return to Galilee. All right, if you'll go ahead and leave that map up there. I'm going to reference back to that map. All right, so he's leaving Jerusalem, Judea, to go to Galilee. And he had to go through Samaria on the way. Eventually, he came to the Samaritan town of Sychar, right there. And what mountain is right there next to it? Mount Gerizim. All right? Lots of significance here. It said it's near the field that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. Jesus was tired from the long walk and sat wearily beside the well about noontime. And so here we see Jesus coming to this very significant place because this is the land that Jacob gave his favorite son, Joseph. Joseph's bones are actually buried in that valley. It's where Jacob's well was at. Because Jacob gave Joseph the best land. And so this is where Jacob's own well was at. And this is where we see this scene play out at Jacob's well. But as you're going from Jerusalem up to Galilee, there's only one way that you can go to pass through these mountains. And it's right through that valley between Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. Okay, if you're a history buff, you know that there's something significant that happened in this place. As Joshua was going to take the land, the promised land, they were coming up through this valley and they were taking the Ark of the Covenant. And they came to the valley between Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. And there they stopped and they had a ceremony at that spot. Because God told them to stop here. And this has actually been scientifically proven that these mountains are 1 mile apart. And the town of Shechem is right there in that valley. And that's where the capital of Samaria was at the time. And so what would happen when Joshua brought the Ark of the Covenant in there, half of the group went up on Mount Gerizim and the other went to Mount Ebal. And they began to pronounce the blessings and the curse of the law as the Ark of the Covenant was in the valley. And Joshua actually built an altar right there to commemorate that moment. And he rewrote the Ten Commandments at this spot. This is pretty significant history going on right here. And just so happened, as Jesus was making his way through Samaria, he had to go through this mountain pass right here because it was the only road. And he stops at this place, at Jacob's well, and a Samaritan, the people they hated the most, came and approached. See, when the Samaritan woman came, Jesus should have got up and left. I mean, that's how bad it was. I mean, like, they couldn't be around each other. They could do business, and that was it. If there was an exchange of money, that was the only reason they could interact with each other. And so here we see this moment to where Jesus is sitting at the Jacob's well. Verse 7, as soon as a Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, please give me a drink. He was alone at that time because the disciples had gone into the village to buy some food. The woman was surprised. For Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, you are a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink? This wasn't like some nice question. It's like, why are you asking me for a drink? You are a Jew. Why are you talking to me? I mean, this is the conversation that started. And so it wasn't a pleasant conversation they started off with. Jesus replied, if you only knew the gift God has for you. And Jews didn't talk this way to Samaritans. If you only knew the gift that God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me and I would give you living water. And he began to love and to share with this woman the love and the grace of God. They had lots of great conversation about the ancestor of Jacob. She said, do you think you're greater than our ancestor Jacob who gave us this well? And Jesus said, anyone who drinks of this water will thirst again, but those who drink of the water I will give will never thirst again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life. He was talking about the Holy Spirit right there, that spring that lives on the inside of us. He's like, please, sir, give me some of this water so that I'll never have to come here again. And then they go into the whole thing like, okay, go get your husband. Well, I don't have a husband. You're right, because you had five husbands and the guy you're living with now is not your husband. And I love what verse 19 says, sir, you must be a prophet. So tell me this. She got her hackles back up again. So tell me this. Why is it that the Jews insist that Jerusalem is the only place to worship, while we Samaritans claim it's here on Mount Gerizim? She's saying right here on Mount Gerizim, where our ancestors worshiped. And Jesus came back with love. He said, believe me, dear woman, for the time is coming when it is no longer matters where you worship the Father, on this mountain or in Jerusalem. You Samaritans know very little about the one that you worship, because they are idol worshipers, while we Jews know everything. It says, for salvation comes through the Jews, but the time is coming, and indeed it's here now, where true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. And he began to share about him being the Messiah to her. And so she was excited, and she ran back to the village. She's like, come out here. It says, come and see this man who told me everything I did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? See, they were both looking for the Messiah. The Jews were looking for the Messiah. The Samaritans were looking for the Messiah. And Jesus shows up in this historic place to where he meets the woman at the well. See, I love what it says in 39. It said, many Samaritans from the village believed in Jesus because the woman said, he told me everything I did. And when they came to see him, they begged him to stay in their village. So he stayed for 2 days. He stayed with the Samaritans for 2 days. That sounds like a relationship to me, doesn't it? That sounds like he crossed a cultural barrier that he was not supposed to cross, because we're the Jews, you're the Samaritans. But he loved. He looked past culture and sin and idolatry and all of the political stuff that happened in the past. He looked past all of that and loved that woman that day. And because of that, it says that many in that village came to believe in Jesus. See, here's my question. I said all that to say this. What does that look like for us today? Do we have prejudice in our life today that stops us from sharing our faith with people? Maybe it's an enemy that you have in your life that you just don't even want to be around them. You just push them away. You're just like, just get out of my face. Might God be calling you to reach that person through a relationship? It might be someone who believes different than you. Maybe there's a Muslim family that moves into your neighborhood. How are you going to react to that? Are you going to put posters up? Beware, we have a Muslim couple in our community. They might blow us up or something. You never know. Or are you going to step past a cultural barrier and go and love those people? Maybe it's someone that has a different lifestyle than you. See, there's a big thing about lifestyle in our nation right now. I just have a different lifestyle than you. You know, the big push politically right now is the LGBT. you know, in their stance to have a place in America. And the Christian church has come out so strong against that. That are we not doing the same thing that the Jews and the Samaritans are doing? Are we not creating a rift in there that's not supposed to be there? No, I disagree with that lifestyle. Am I willing to cross a cultural barrier to love a group of people that need Jesus? Am I going to allow that image, that stigma, or whatever to stop me from reaching people that God's called me to? See, this is what Jesus is showing us here with the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, is that, hey, you're going to have people you don't like, you're going to have people you don't agree with. But listen, I love what Jesus says here. His response to his disciples. They came back from the village, they saw this scene happening, they're just like, what, Jesus, what are you doing? And it says, meanwhile, while the woman was gone, they urged Jesus to eat some food, and he said, my nourishment comes from doing the will of God who has sent me and from finishing his work. It says, you know the saying, 4 months between planting and harvest, but I say, wake up and look around. The fields are ripe for harvest. They're standing at the base of Mount Gerizim in a Samaritan town. He said, look up. The harvest is ready. To them, they're thinking, but they're Samaritans. Let me tell you something. Look up around you at work. Look up in our community. The harvest is ready. Are you going to judge them or are you going to love them? Are you going to judge them based on their lifestyle because of their beliefs? Or are you going to let the will of God be your nourishment? I love that because he's saying that I'm satisfied because I'm doing the will of my God who sent me and finishing this work. Is that our drive? Is that our nourishment in life? Are we looking out at the harvest and thinking, man, that's a lot of work? Well, that harvest over there kind of looks bad. That kind of looks like a hard place to go in and harvest, so I'll leave that to somebody else. See, maybe God's calling you to a Samaritan in your life. Maybe he's calling you to someone that you wouldn't naturally hang out with or have a relationship with. Would you be willing to step across those boundaries and begin a relationship, to begin to pour into someone's life? Because faith is shared through relationships. See, if we're going to reach these people that need us, the homosexual community, the Muslims, the whoever that you see as a Samaritan in your life, are you willing to step across that line and get out of your comfort zone, maybe risk your reputation to go hang out with the sinners for a little bit and build some relationships? See, we can put ourselves in a Christian bubble and we can endure till the end. Or we can be like Jesus and walk through Samaria. Go to the places that the Samaritans are hanging out in and engage, invest, love. Because let me tell you something, a lot of these Samaritans are looking at us and think they're hypocrites. They're bigots. They hate us. See, the church shouldn't be known as a place of hate because our God is a God of love. Are we willing to do it? See, my prayer today is that God, I just pray that you just come deep into our hearts and reveal our prejudice to us today. God, dig deep. God, show us the places to where we hold something against people, whether it be a certain person that we consider an enemy or whether it be a group of people that we think they're too far gone. They're not worth it. They'll never hear. God, break our hearts for those people. God, give us a heart that's tender towards those people. God, give us opportunities to God to build relationships with the Samaritans of this day and age. The people that we seem to have a big rift between us, God, mend that so that we can share your love and your grace with them today. God, work on our hearts. God, give us eyes to see the way you see. God, help us to lift our eyes and see the harvest that is ready. God, are we ready to go harvest? God, give us the heart of a harvester today, God. We thank you. We love you in Jesus' name. Can we stand today? We're going to worship today. And I just pray during this time that you spend some time with God and pray that prayer. God, show me my heart. Let's worship.